So before I start here, I just want to say a couple things to you. You can lay it here or hold it, whatever you want to do, whatever's comfortable for you. I want to offer a couple of things. The first one is that I have Corey and I did not talk about the fact that I was going to take that microphone. So I just want you to know I'm taking it so that Katie is mic'd when she goes on here in just a few minutes. But the second thing I wanted to mention was that, you know, when Pastor Rob is out, and so I'm kind of scrambling around here pre-service, worship service on Sunday mornings on those days, and you all are so kind and so generous to me in helping me get ready. And I was downstairs. I had to, first of all, interrupt the ladies in their Bible study this morning and ask for some guidance about where to place some things, and they helped me through that. And I thought, okay, now I'm done. That's everything. And then I got downstairs, and I'm looking everywhere for the pitcher for communion, and I can't find it. So I heard they were going to take a break for just a second between songs. I had to go in and interrupt them and say, where's the pitcher? Finally, I had to text Rob and say, where's the pitcher? And he's like, yeah, we don't have one. So I just texted him back and I said, I guess, you know, everything was going too well this morning. I had to make stuff up to fret over and worry about because it wouldn't have been right without that. So thank you all so much for being so supportive to me and helpful through those moments. And you all have done just great today at reading and singing. And it's always a pleasure to be here and worship with all of you. So for several weeks now, we have been talking about companioning. And we have talked about holy listening and vulnerability and helplessness and collaboration. And finally, last week, we looked at the big impact small actions can have. And I have to share with you that the idea of companioning has been what God has been calling me forward towards for many years now. And it's even what led me into seminary, although I did not understand it as I do today. And in seminary is where I finally found the right words and the outlet for what I had been thinking and feeling and had no words for. It was all very exciting for me. And then I came here, and it was amazing to find a church that was embracing the very ideas I was feeling so passionately about. And I just feel blessed to be on this journey with all of you. But it's more than that. I feel like God is completely at the wheel here. And as Ruth, one of our residents over at Taylor Springs, said to us this past Wednesday during Ash Wednesday service, you know when God has changed your heart. And she's right. We do know. We know in ways that we cannot explain to others when God has changed our heart. We just know that God is completely in control and guiding us towards something in our lives. And when our heart has been changed, whatever it is that he's changing in there becomes something that we just have to do. Often, it seems like all the obstacles to it just kind of crumble before us. It doesn't mean that we don't have obstacles. It just means that they kind of work themselves out, and they just seem to kind of go away and crumble. They just aren't strong enough to keep us from doing what God's calling us to do by changing our hearts. And I feel that happening here right now with all of you as well in this period of when we're looking at companioning. I've spent the last few weeks listening to the stories and witnessing the things that you're all being called to do, and I just get the overwhelming sense that I know something is unfolding here that is much bigger than us. It's really important work with tremendous potential to reach people in our community and beyond. And the ways that we are already working in partnership with and walking alongside of others, well, it's just very much our testimony as to how God is working in all of our lives. I love that there's so much excitement about it here, too. A few weeks ago, Donna emailed me and shared a companioning story, and then she excitedly wrote in the email, I thought I was doing companioning. She was. And Peggy just glowed last week as she shared her ideas about how we can all work together to companion one another on our journeys. And Wendy's description about all the men and women in Ohio prisons who need friends moved many of us. A small group of us have been meeting for about 6 months now, sharing our stories about companioning and how companioning has changed our lives. They are beautiful and moving stories, and I see God in each one of those stories. I see Him moving and growing and opening our eyes and hearts to one another and teaching us how to see God in the world around us. And in a few moments, Katie is going to share a meaningful experience with companioning that she has had. And during this time that we've been preparing for this morning, she has so often said to me, "I didn't even know I was companioning. I didn't even know it was anything special." And her story is wonderful, and it's beautiful. And it's a very meaningful example of how companioning does not necessarily mean you have to take on a whole new volunteer project in order to do it. Her story shows us that often opportunities are companion are right there already within our lives, and we just need to recognize them and become committed to them. I think when we express God's love for us by the way we are in relationship with others, by the way we walk with others, we often don't realize we're doing anything special at all. We're just doing and being who God has created us to be, who He has loved us into being. And it's often just not a whole big thing. In Ecclesiastes, the main character, who is not the author, is Kohelet. Kohelet is the Hebrew word for the one who gathers people. And in this case, he or she gathers them so that they can learn. And so an acceptable way to translate Kohelet has been to call him or her the teacher. So Kohelet's message in life, all throughout Ecclesiastes, is that all things in it are hevel. Now, hevel is often translated as meaningless. So he's often understood as saying all things are meaningless. But hevel is actually the Hebrew word for smoke or vapor. So it would be more accurate to say that things are like smoke or vapor. All things are fleeting. They appear as solid and tangible, but when we reach for them, they vanish within our fingertips. Hevel also implies mystery or something that is very puzzling, an enigma or a paradox of sorts. Kohelet says that we spend our time building wealth, pleasure, status, and careers, but it's all for nothing. We even chase after wisdom and the beauty in the world, but as we chase after it all, it just blows away. It's like chasing the wind, and hevel, everything is hevel. None of these hold meaning for us because we build them apart from God. Placing our value and worth in our careers, our buildings, our homes, and even our creative arts. But nothing is changed permanently by our work or our incessant search for attaching meaning into our lives. So how do we move forward? And for that matter, what does any of this have to do with companioning? Well, Kohelet teaches us to accept hevel. That's the only way to get through this, is to just accept that everything has little meaning to it. But he says that God has created a gift for us in accepting hevel. Can you imagine what that gift might be? The gift is friendship. It's family, it's friends, and even simple meals and a simple sunny day. But when he speaks of family and friends, I am certain he does not mean the casual friendship as in, "Oh yeah, I work with Joe. I worked with him a couple years ago." I think I understand him to mean companionship. This is our gift from God, to know that we are not alone in the singular fleeting time that is always just beyond our grasp. We are experiencing hevel, nothingness, meaninglessness, but we are meant to experience it in the company of those who care about us and whom we care about. This is a blessing, the gift God gives to us. He gives us one another. Now, forgive me if I have already shared this story with you. And I would like to say you'll never hear it again, but it's one of my favorite stories, so I'm probably going to share it with you at some point because I'll forget that I've done it. But 30 years ago, when Bill and I were going through premarital counseling with our minister, one of the last things our minister said to us before he sent us on our way, before the wedding ceremony, was that we were God's gift to one another. That we were created and meant and given to one another so that each of us could experience God's love through the other. Now, let me tell you, there is nothing that makes it harder for me to be mad at Bill than to remember that moment with the minister before we were married. I can't be mad at him when I think about that. When I think about I'm the one who's supposed to carry to him an example of God's love for him, I can't be mad. I can't yell at him. I can't, you know, pout about it. I can't do any of the things I would like to do. And so I have to change my tune, and I have to be who God calls me and created me to be in that moment. And that has carried over into other relationships, relationships with my kids, relationships with all of you, relationships with people I work with, even relationships with people in the grocery store or people on the road. I am there to have them experience God's love through me. We are meant to face our challenges together so we can help one another pick ourselves up and carry onward. We are meant to have others to celebrate our joys with and be happy with for one another. And I believe that Joseph's earthly Joseph, the earthly father to Jesus, understood what a difference companions make in our lives. There have been formal writings on Joseph as far back as 800 AD, when church fathers recognized Joseph as nutritor domini, or educator and guardian of the Lord. Thomas Aquinas points out in his writings that Joseph saved Mary from a cultural stoning, the punishment for pregnancy out of wedlock, and further declares that Joseph provided the care and protection of a human father. Centuries later, in 1889, Pope Leo XIII urged Catholics to pray to Saint Joseph. He wrote that he, Joseph, set himself to protect with a mighty love. Today, Sicilians still claim St. Joseph as their patron saint and give him credit for saving Sicily from a famine in the Middle Ages. So ingrained in the minds of many believers is the idea that Joseph was a devoted and loyal defender and provider for Mary and Joseph and Jesus that they continue to honor him to this day by donating food to the needy on St. Joseph's Day. And he is known throughout the world as patron saint to fathers, families, virgins, expectant mothers, unborn children, immigrants, travelers, and even house hunters. God chose Joseph as a blessing to Mary and Jesus, knowing he would be their companion. Joseph listened both to Mary and the angel when he found out she was already expecting, and he made choices. He made commitments to do what he could and companion them. He helped them by providing a home, by providing nourishment, and by fulfilling their basic needs. He made himself vulnerable repeatedly throughout their lives as he protected Mary and Jesus. He knew how to balance each of his roles as husband, adopted father, educator, provider, and defender. And he did this all as Joseph, just being himself, by being who God created him to be, a descendant of David and a carpenter from Nazareth. He simply committed to responding as best he could and as best as he knew how, in a way that was helpful to the people who he cared about. Joseph's story is often forgotten, and it's often ignored, for us to begin to see how companioning is not always a huge step, but it's a great example for us to begin to see how it's not, how it is a easy step into companioning. It's not that far out of our comfort zones. It's often a simple response to someone we care about that leads us into deeper relationship with them. We simply make the choice to be there for them and then commit to tending to that relationship by listening, being vulnerable, being helpful, using our relationship skills in collaborative ways, and to make small actions which yield big impact. And I think Katie's story is going to provide you with an even better example or another way that we might do it ourselves. I think you need it. I don't think there's a mic.
Sorry, I don't know how to do this. Get it? Can you guys hear me? Hello?
Not that one.
No?
No.
Hello? Good morning.
Good morning.
Way out of my comfort zone. So, forgive me.
Still can't hear.
So I need to be closer to it?
You're good.
So, as a child, you know that a parent's love is special. And I knew it was. I didn't know how special it was until I got to have my own children, and it's huge. It's the best thing in the world. Unfortunately, my ex-husband was an alcoholic, and we left him when Roy and Annie were 2 and 6, and we got a little house over here in Royal Manor. My next-door neighbor was also a single mom, which was kind of cool, but also she often, very often, had men over and spending the night and stuff. And to me, that just made it plain how important it was to have a safe, stable home for my children. No strangers in my home. I didn't want my children. Your home is your sanctuary. You should never feel uncomfortable in your own home. So that was like put into focus for me. And then also at the time, this was the time of wine coolers, and I would have a couple wine coolers in my refrigerator just for the weekends and never even noticed when they were missing. But then one day I was putting garbage out, and my son had taken the wine coolers and put them unopened into the garbage. And that's when I realized how important it was to be present, to not be intoxicated ever. I didn't realize how much my ex-husband's alcoholism had affected him. And that just brought everything back into focus, how important it is to be a good, consistent, protective parent of your children. When Annie was in middle school, cell phones came along, or maybe earlier, I don't know. I was never really interested in cell phones. Didn't want to get them for my kids. But in high school, it was so important to know where they were, who they were with, but it was also important for them to have a cell phone. If they found themselves in an uncomfortable situation, if they found themselves with people they were uncomfortable with, I just kind of realized how important cell phones were, especially for teenagers. So when Annie was a sophomore in high school, she joined the Lionettes, and this is where we met Taylor, who was also a Lionette, and she was funny and fun and was very respectful. Was around our house a lot. We got to know her really well. You can't not get to know her because she's just an open, wonderful person. And she would tell me that when her father got angry with her over whatever, he would turn off her cell phone. And this happened several times. And that just went against everything I thought a parent should do. Whether you're angry with your child or not, you don't cut off the safety line. So we put her on our plan, not even thinking about it. We just wanted her to be safe. It was no big deal. And at one point, Taylor had gone to spend the night with a friend or a school friend who did not treat her very well, and she called me up crying and upset. So I went to pick her up. Annie wasn't even home. Like, Taylor, this was when I kind of realized my consistency and dependability became something that Taylor appreciated and counted on. And that made it more important to me to see that. Taylor and I have our own relationship outside of Annie. We both suffered from depression, and so she's asked about it, and I've shared. And now, we text each other just to see how we're doing. She texts me just to say, hi, I love you, how's it going, how are you feeling? And I do the same thing, because, you know, Annie's a travel nurse, she's out of the state, so I don't get to see Taylor as much. But I love that she keeps in touch with me, and I love that I have her to keep in touch with. She's just become part of our family. My son considers her a sister. And, of course, Annie and she are best friends. And, honestly, I never felt like I was making a conscious decision to companion her. It became really important for me that she knows that I'll be there for her. I'll help her when I can. I'll just listen if that's what she needs. I've always envied people that know their calling, and I wish I had a calling. I don't. But companioning kind of helps me feel like I'm doing something good in life, and it makes my life better, too. So that's my story.
Thank you, Katie, for sharing your story and your relationship with Taylor with us. It's both moving and a testament to the restoration that you were able to recognize that Taylor needed. And so thank you for being so loving and such a giving companion to her. Our commitment to being companions to one another is not a role of volunteer or mission work. It's an expression of God's love for us and how our cups run over with his presence and his grace, and how he has loved us and blessed us with friends and people who choose to walk in this journey with us. So over the next few weeks, we will hear stories from Elena and from Jeannie and others who have experiences with companioning. And as we have already mentioned, we hope that all of you take a few moments to stop by our bulletin board out in the narthex and use the post-it notes to either share your own experiences with companion or tell us about your commitment to companioning during Lent and how companioning maybe has changed your life, or just offer words of encouragement or prayers of support for those companioning who've already posted out there. Maybe people who aren't posting, they're a little shy about sharing it, so prayers for them as well. Because like Donna, I think most of us are companioning at some place in our life. We just need to recognize it and be committed to doing it. Pastor Rob and I would love to see that whole wall around the bulletin board just covered by collared post-it notes from all of you as we companion over these next few weeks. So, in one of the ways that Jesus companioned us, he taught us how to remember him at the communion table. And so I'm going to invite Mike to come up and help me out over at the communion table, and we'll turn our attention over there.